This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is The Morning Run, and you're here with Lynn, Noel and Philip. We're discussing the latest ventilation guidelines to curb COVID-19. Now, back in April, the World Health Organization recognized what many had known or suspected, that the COVID-19 virus is airborne. Now, since then, several governments, including Australia and Singapore, have issued guidelines on how best to ventilate common spaces.
Now, earlier this week, the Malaysian government also released a guide to improve ventilation and indoor air quality in order to reduce the airborne transmission of COVID-19. The recommendations, which have been broken down by type of premises, healthcare facility, residential, non-residential, and public space, includes measures such as 1, increasing the ventilation rate, 2, reducing the number of residents in a building, 3, opening windows or doors, 4, using removable air purifiers, and increasing the inflow of fresh air from outside the building. Now that we have these guidelines in place, the question then becomes, what can we do to encourage take-up of them?
So for some thoughts on this, we're speaking this morning with Professor Dr. Sanjay Rampal, epidemiologist at University of Malaya. Dr. Sanjay, thank you so much for joining us today. So the government has just announced these new ventilation guidelines to curb COVID-19. How well would you say they compare to WHO recommendations, as well as maybe other guidelines introduced by other countries which have done so?
Thank you, Lynn, Noel and Philip. Going through the guidelines, actually it's a guidance note, and it's more of a guide rather than having any regulatory effect. So this guide was based on the industry code of practice on indoor air quality published by our Malaysian DOSH, Department of Occupational Safety and Health, and other documents related to the COVID-19. It does tally well. It does agree well, even with the WHO recommendations for ventilations for prevention of COVID-19 transmission. I think it's overall a very good document, but the way it's phrased and the way it's framed, it's more towards, it's not for the layman, number one. It's for those who basically have buildings, right? And the idea here is to just remind all of those owners that they should be basically maintaining and managing their ventilation well during this period of time.
What guidelines do you foresee would be most difficult to implement?
So the issue with guidelines is similar. So it's good natured in its meaning. However, implementation of it, some of the implementations may be difficult. But if you look at the guideline says to do the best you can, right? So typically what happens is for any building before they are used, they go through an inspection. And during that inspection, ventilation is part of is part of the exercise of inspecting those buildings. I think here, changing ventilation, changing the structural aspects of ventilation is difficult. So if you were to say, like, let's change the whole heating duct and ventilation duct, the air conditioning ducts, those are very difficult, but there's also much more simpler things to do, like steps to do. Like, for example, open the windows, right? Reduce the crowding of the area, so to increase the ventilation rate and the availability of air for that particular spaces. So reduce crowds. I think those, and also there was a very practical one about limit the use of small shed spaces, for example. That's a very practical advice given.
And so, Dr. Sanjay, I mean, what would be some of the best ways to encourage take-up, in your opinion? Would a carrot or a stick option work in this instance?
Thank you very much for the question. I think we have enough of sticks, right, during this pandemic management. We should stop this paternalistic approach towards how we manage this pandemic. We have too many top-down authoritative policies that in the end are unevenly implemented. So this kind of management will not get the necessary buy-in from our community for the long term. Now, emphasis on enforcement and high unreasonable penalties rather than compassionate health promoting approaches is what is fatiguing our community. So I think it creates a disconnect between the management and the layperson. And at the end of the time, if we use too much of stick, that means if we enforce with high enforcements, high penalties, That leads to a loss of trust with the public, and it results in poor compliance overall. Thank you.
While we have you here, to your understanding, what can the Ministry of Health's new Greater Klang Valley Task Force achieve that the ministry and other existing committees cannot?
So thank you for the question. So the first thing about the task force is it appears to be a strategic move by the Ministry of Health to be more nimble in managing a region consisting of multiple states. So I think we have to appreciate that the Klang Valley area consists of areas in the states of Selangor, Negeri Sembilan, KL and Putrajaya. It is actually very difficult to manage the healthcare system because under the traditional MOH structure, the management goes through the respective state health departments. So you have a situation here in Klang Valley where you actually have three different state health departments managing resources, managing healthcare. So I think it was a very good idea to start up this Greater Klang Valley Task Force, but we should note that this is an MOH initiative. The way it has been presented, and I think it's for to make them perform better, for better utilization of resources, better spreading of healthcare services. Now they also state that they would work with external experts. They would work with the economic sector because that has been one of the criticism of our health policies, and also that they will basically ramp up vaccination. To me, based on what has been released, I think it is good. It's a very good initiative.
Mm. Now, aside from the, I believe the Deputy DG of Health, do we know who's going to be on the task force?
So my crystal ball today is all opaque. I think we just have to wait. I think we have to give the Ministry of Health some time to work this out because it always takes time for them to build a committee. I am sure that I have faith that they will build a proper committee, and I will comment when the list comes out.
We are also thinking about other approaches here. Rather than forming yet another task force, would it perhaps have been better to streamline methods of communication between existing agencies and ministries and also the state authorities in fighting COVID-19?
I do agree. I fully agree. So we need a whole of society approach, right? But at the moment, what we're getting is a whole of government approach and at times a whole of ministry or ministry approaches. So I think communication between existing agencies and ministries fighting COVID should be better harmonized. We really do need to take the politics out of this management, and we really need to improve communication. However, from my understanding, the pandemic management is still being overseen by the NSC. There was no change in structure for the overall pandemic management.
Now, we have hit a record high of over 13,000 COVID-19 cases a day. So, you know, looking at the pandemic management now versus when several months ago when we were still at 2,000 cases a day, do you think we should have acted faster perhaps back then in order to lock down parts of the economy? What's your gauge of the performance so far?
I think hindsight is a very difficult thing to comment on, because in hindsight we have 2020 vision, right? We would know exactly what to do. There are a few points to note with the current situation of 11,000, 13,000. There is two drivers for the increase in transmission. One driver has been an ongoing driver, which is basically the widespread community transmission. And the MCO3 and the FMCO and the initial NRP, that had an effect of reducing transmission for a while. But I think then fatigue set in, and I think more economic sectors had to open up. The way we were handling the movement restrictions were not done ideally. So what has happened then over time is transmission still continues, right? Movement restrictions have been here for so long, it's ineffective, it's outdated. We should just move on. And then what the second driver is EMCO. So with EMCO, what has happened is we have had mass testing. So these mass testings actually detect those undetected cases in the community. Because to my estimations, the total number of infections is about 4 times to 5 times those reported every day. So EMCO did was it picked up some of those cases which was undetected. And that's why that's another contributing factor to the jump in the numbers.
Dr. Sanjay, thank you so much for joining us this morning. That was Professor Dr. Sanjay Rampal, epidemiologist at University Malaya, giving us some insight into some of the new guidelines and new approaches that the government has taken in order to fight COVID-19. Philip, you have some thoughts here. What did you think?
Well, I think what struck me the most was his perspective on the Klang Valley Special Task Force. And Noel, you made the point that it's all about coordination, but he made a very good distinction that we are currently all of government, all of ministry, whereas perhaps we need to take an all of society approach. And the point about coordination is perhaps that's why the task force is necessary, because you bring people together to get the coordination going. Because I think perhaps the nature and setup of government is that you do need this kind of committee and all that to get the communication going. So perhaps that's why they're doing it. Because as you know, we are all interconnected, especially in Klang Valley. The resources all can be reallocated and shared quite seamlessly.
Yeah, and I think I was also struck by his comments that we don't really need any more paternalistic policies when it comes to addressing the COVID-19 pandemic, right? But I guess the difficulty that I see there is that public trust has already been eroded somewhat. So in that instance, how do we then get the public back on board in order to achieve that all of society approach when we are a year and almost a year and a half into a global pandemic and still seeing such high numbers of cases? It's quite the dilemma that the government is facing, unfortunately. But I think the important thing is just we need to do what we can individually as well in order to maintain the safety of ourselves and the people around us. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.